Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a huge docket, so let's get to it today. First, Gabby Petito's remains have been released to the family. Second, if the dead guy is a jerk, does it justify a reduced sentence? Ghislaine Maxwell's trial is coming up, and the defense team wants the juror questionnaires and voir dire kept secret. The Supreme Court seems inclined to reinstate the Boston Bombers death penalty case. The Ahmaud Arbery case is getting ready to start. And then finally, a mom gone wild and our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where a practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the criminal procedure, and the law in regards to cold cases and current actual criminal cases. Welcome. We hope you enjoy. Now, if you haven't done so, please hit that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live like we did last night. Hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. And please leave me a comment below about what we discuss here today. And don't forget, you can listen to this show and past shows of Crime Talk by downloading the show on all of your favorite podcasting apps like Apple, Spotify, iHeart, Android, Amazon Music, and Audible. And it's amazing how our numbers on the podcast have just shot up through the roof. Thank you. All right, now we got to pay some of the bills, right? Everybody here doesn't work for free. So please go to Crime Talk Prep and you can claim your 3-month emergency food kit. In today's world of supply chain shortages, changing rules, you just don't know what things are going to be doing next. So you need to be prepared. Take care of you and your family. Go to crimetalkprep.com. Get your 3-month supply. Get $100 off for 3 months. You'll be happy you did. And guess what? If that's too much for you, you don't have to order 3 months worth. You can order 1 month, a couple weeks. You can buy what you want, but go to Crime Talk Prep to order all of your items there. It's just the responsible thing to do. Hopefully you never need it. It's like having insurance. You hope you never need it, but when you do, you're glad it's there. All right, let's move on to the docket. Gabby Petito's body has been held and basically studied and examined for a month to determine ultimately how she died. And now that we know, the family is finally allowed to go and get her and lay her to rest. Petito's parents are reportedly heading to Wyoming Wednesday morning from Long Island. They'll retrieve Gabby's remains. They'll have her cremated and then return to New York this weekend with her ashes. Now, as you may recall, the Teton County coroner announced that the cause of death to be strangulation and the manner of death, obviously homicide. The coroner noted that Gabby's homicide seemed to be carried out in a lot of anger, while also pointing out that the body had been left out in the wilderness for at least 3 to 4 weeks before she was finally found last month. Now, a lot of anger. We've talked about this before. Strangulation, there's a lot of anger there. And to actually kill somebody through strangulation takes a significant amount of time. Also, when you're dealing with the remains that have been outside, you don't know exactly what you're going to get. Obviously, certain amounts of decomposing takes place, and you also have to assume that the creatures in the wild may have retrieved some of the remains as well and hauled those off. So you never know exactly what you're going to get. Eventually, we may ultimately get that information, but that may have been some of the reason why the autopsy took so long. Now, a lot of people say, well, isn't this obvious? Why isn't Brian Laundry being charged? Isn't it obvious? He was the last one supposedly with her. He drives her van back, allegedly uses the credit card on the way back to his family residence in Florida. And now obviously he has been on the run, on the lam, so to speak, but he hasn't been found. Well, I'm telling you, it's not that simple. basically the police have to be able to show that it was in fact Brian Laundrie that committed the crime against Gabby Petito. Now, the FBI was looking for DNA. They went to the house, they got permission, and they collected some items of DNA on from Brian Laundrie's house a few weeks ago. But with a body being out in the forest, the weather, etc., DNA may not be able to be there. And so the mere fact that Brian Laundrie was there, it may seem somewhat plausible. However, you don't know, and assuming if he's ever found or charged or brought to trial, his version of the events may be quite different, that maybe she left. He thought she left. He didn't know. He headed back. You never know. But the reality of it is the prosecutors have to be able to say that he's the one that did it. And they have to have more evidence other than, well, we think he was the last one with her. I understand it looks bad for Brian Laundrie. We got to give him the presumption of innocence. But remember, if it was such a slam dunk, and if it was so easy to put Brian Laundrie responsible for the death of Gabby Petito, it's not one thing to basically know it, but it's another to actually be able to prove it. Short of a confession at this point, I'm not sure they're going to have the physical evidence to do it. There may be some circumstantial evidence that he was there, he left, he didn't talk to the police, but guess what? You can't use his silence against him in any way, and he left before any charges were filed. So you have to wonder, what evidence does the prosecution really have at this point? Like I said, it's one thing to be able to think it, have that hunch, to believe in your heart that he did it, and he very well may have. We don't know for sure, but it's another thing to be able to actually be able to prove it in a court of law. And remember, that's the only thing that matters. You have to be able to prove your case with sufficient legal and competent evidence that you got to get in through the rules of evidence. It's a lot more difficult than most people think. We'll see if charges are filed here shortly now that we have the autopsy result, and we'll see if the prosecution has the link to actually say that he, Brian Laundrie, is the one that committed the act. Wait and see. Now, I'm not really sure this is news, but Brian Laundrie's father was spotted mowing his lawn in Florida just the other day, less than 24 hours after the cause of death of Gabby was released. Now, Chris refused to react when people asked about Petito's autopsy results, which showed that she had been manually strangled during her ill-fated cross-country trip with their 23-year-old son. I mean, the guy, you still got to mow your lawn. Your son is a fugitive. I get people are upset, but guess what? Protesting outside somebody's house like that is not going to one day just make them crack and say, let me tell you where Brian is, or let me tell you how he got away. It's not going to happen. Frankly, save your energy. Maybe use some of that energy to go look for Brian Laundrie somewhere rather than simply harassing other people. Police reportedly responded to the Laundrie residence the other day when protesters standing outside their home heckled the family after the latest developments in the investigation. The protesters, you can see in this video here, started yelling, "Come on, dirty laundries. Come on, you guys like to strangle people." Now, really, is that really going to solve much? And really, frankly, that's just harassment. Brian Laundrie's has obviously been on the run for a month now, and a lot of people, a lot of survival experts are saying he's either A, had help, B, blending in, or C, dead. Or the Crime Talk hunch or version is that he is sitting in a warm tropical location drinking warm fuzzy drinks on the beach. Who knows? No one really knows for sure, and the search will continue from here as well. The bottom line is that nobody knows where he is, and until they find him, there's nothing that's really going to be done. That's the bottom line. And now the news media is looking for so much information on Brian Laundrie simply for the fact that they haven't been able to find him. The hunt for him has gone somewhat cold. Now the news media has actually started quoting middle school friends who want to remain anonymous. I have real problems revealing anonymous information when there's nothing really to back it up. And if people aren't willing to stand up and put their name behind it, frankly, I'm not going to talk about it either. And frankly, it's rather useless. So just remember, ladies and gentlemen, anybody can say anything. It's another thing to actually get up and say it and mean it. and be able to back it up in court. All right, next on the docket. If the dead guy is a jerk, does it justify a reduced sentence? The answer is possibly, okay? Now, when you defend somebody on a homicide case, there's a couple of things that you can do. Obviously, A, my client didn't do it. B, if my client did it, it was in self-defense. C, the dead guy deserved killing. Obviously, a couple options there, all right? But the dead guy deserved killing isn't an actual defense. But sometimes if you can make the dead guy seem like, well, he deserved killing, it's a really a form of mitigation. Well, that's what happened last week when a Minnesota woman and her son pled guilty. Connie Herbst, 63, pled guilty last week to helping her son, Austin James Herbst, 27, get rid of her slain, allegedly abusive husband's body several years ago. The charge is aiding an offender after the fact in the death of 57-year-old Gary Albert Herbst's death. Now, Connie Herbst's son in June got a relatively merciful punishment after pleading guilty to second-degree intentional murder. He got 7 3/4 years to be served in prison, 4 3/4 years to be served on a probationary sentence for a total of 12.5 years. This was far less than the state sentencing guidelines called for, which was 21.75 years, 21 3/4 years. Now, according to the criminal complaint, Gary Herbst disappeared in July of 2013. Austin Herbst, the son, finally reported his father missing in March of 2014, saying that the missing man came home, packed up some clothing, took $5,000 and left in a gray Honda driven by an unknown person. Good story. Gary Herbst turned up dead on December 3rd of 2017 in Barron County, Wisconsin. A family's dog found Herbst's skull and brought it to the property owner's driveway. The residents obviously reported this to the sheriff deputies, who found the rest of the skeletonized remains nearby. And there appeared to be a bullet hole in the top of the skull, according to the police reports. Now, the DNA Doe Project, and we've helped them a little bit in the past, helped deputies identify the remains and those belonging to Mr. Herbst. Investigators interviewed Connie and Austin. The son said that he had not seen his father since the disappearance. The neighbors described Gary as a belligerent, cursing constantly at his wife and son, and apparently calling the police over for the smallest of complaints. Now, the residents of the Herbst family former home also told investigators they found an unusual stain on the basement concrete floor while they were remodeling. Investigators determined that that stain, well, it was blood. In further talks, Austin Herbst told investigators that his father was verbally and physically abusive towards his mother. And in 2020, text messages were sent between Austin and his mother saying that investigators had found her husband's body and they were treating it as a homicide. Of course they would. He had an alleged bullet hole in the skull. Of course they are. Now, as far as Austin Herbst was concerned, he believed he did right by killing his father. And he said, to this day, I believe he was going to kill her that night, referring to the daughter. So the question then, like I said, the fact that the dead guy is a jerk, is mean, rude, belligerent, abusive, yeah, it may not be a defense, but it certainly can provide a little mitigation. Now, we're certainly not telling anyone that they should harm somebody if they're being verbally or physically abused. Contact the police. Now, I got to put that disclaimer in there because some people would say that I was promoting violence, which we don't do. So there's the disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen. You can't believe what people will accuse you of doing. It's amazing. All right, Ghislaine Maxwell. Her trial is coming up. I don't know about you. I cannot wait. Well, apparently a few people can, and that's Ghislaine Maxwell. Through her attorneys, has asked the federal judge to keep the proposed jury questionnaire and voir dire questions under seal to avoid tainting a jury pool. Now, the federal prosecutors consented to the request, which, if granted, would inject a degree of secrecy in the high-profile case known for decades of official silence, confidentiality, and alleged cover-ups. Now, let's be frank about this, ladies and gentlemen. When you start voir dire, in some cases, you just get maybe 20, 30 minutes to talk to the potential jury panel. Some jurisdictions do a standard questionnaire. Some have a standard questionnaire for the run-of-the-mill cases. Some have a questionnaire for homicide cases. And some have questionnaires for sex assault and sex assault on children cases. And basically, that's so that you can screen out the people that maybe it's just not the right fit for them to be the juror. And in state cases, you don't basically get to share your voir dire with the court. However, in federal court, and it's starting to change a little bit, at least where I've practiced, that you actually get voir dire. Voir dire in some federal courts is basically the judge saying, juror number one, you can be a fair and impartial juror, can't you? Yes, Your Honor. Do you believe you can follow the evidence? Yes, I can. Seems like they're qualified to me. Take a seat. Well, now, just because the judge would conduct voir dire like that sometimes, most times the prosecution and defense gets to ask questions. But usually in federal court, and I saw this in the military as well, you had to submit your questions and the judge had to approve your questions. Crazy. I hate it because you felt like you're literally reading from a list. It's terrible. All right. And I once had a judge who's going to conduct his own voir dire. And I said, Your Honor, can I get at least 15 minutes with the jury? And the judge said, Mr. Reich, if I give you voir dire with the jury, then I got to let the prosecution do voir dire with the jury. And guess what? They're not any good at it. So it's painful to watch. Now, he was joking, of course. But let's face it, usually the defense side is a little better with voir dire because, frankly, it's more important to us. The prosecution should literally be able to take 12 people and convince them that their case is so overwhelming that the defendant should be convicted. It shouldn't matter. Defense, we need to be a little more selective, make sure we can get those jurors that can be fair and impartial. All right, sorry for the brief digression. Now, the trial is scheduled to start November 29th, and obviously Ghislaine Maxwell stands accused of facilitating and participating in that guy Jeff's sexual abuse of minors going back decades. And the allegations in the superseding indictment date back to 1994. Do you know exactly where you were in 1994? Do you recall what you were doing in 1994? Most people probably couldn't. I probably couldn't tell you what I did a couple of weeks ago unless I looked at my calendar. Imagine trying to defend yourself for actions going back to 1994. A lot of this all took place before Epstein copped that controversial plea deal purporting to shield his accused co-conspirators all the way back to 2008. And on Tuesday, the government and defense provided the judge, Allison Nathan, a roadmap for the trial. The government estimates that it would rest within 4 weeks from the start of the trial. And they said that's a conservative estimate for the government, and it could be even less time, maybe 3 weeks. They said that that'll vary based upon the cross-examinations, so they don't want to underestimate. Now, in abundance of caution, however, the government projects approximately 4 weeks for their case in chief. And given the anticipated length of the trial, prosecutors request that the judge seat only jurors with availability beyond the Christmas holiday. Now, the judge previously forced prosecutors to provide Maxwell's defense team with the identities of any unnamed co-conspirators who they plan to refer to at trial on October 11th. As of September, the prosecutors claim that they only plan to refer to two alleged co-conspirators, but they added that was subject to change, like all good attorneys do. Qualify it. That's right. This is going to be interesting. And I really hope that this does, in fact, go to trial. I still think the big appellate issue on this case is going to be the issue of the immunity. If Bill Cosby can have his prosecutor bound from a press conference, Jeffrey Epstein's plea agreement with the U.S. Attorney's Office there in Miami went all the way up to Maine Justice. I'm not exactly sure how that doesn't bind New York. There's some case law on that, but, you know, I got some real problems with that. When the people at Maine Justice make those deals, I'm not sure how it doesn't bind the entire U.S. Attorney's Office. We'll see if there's a conviction. That will be the issue on appeal, no doubt. All right, next on the docket, the Supreme Court seemed pretty ready, it sounded like, to reinstate the death penalty for convicted Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Dzhonarov. Now, in more than 90 minutes of argument, the court's conservative justice, six of them, seemed likely to embrace the Biden administration's argument that a federal appeals court mistakenly threw out Dzhonarov's death sentence for his role in the bombing that killed three people near the finish line of the Boston Marathon in 2013. Now, as you may recall, the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston ruled last year that the trial judge improperly excluded evidence that could have shown Dzhonarov was deeply influenced by his older brother and was somehow less responsible for the carnage. The appeals court also faulted the judge for not sufficiently questioning jurors about their exposure to extensive news coverage of the bombing. Now, the more liberal justices appeared more favorable to Dzhonarov, and in the appellate ruling, if the appellate ruling were affirmed, Dzhonarov would have to face a new sentencing trial if the administration decided to continue pressing for the death sentence. The main focus was on the evidence that implicated Dzhonarov in the triple killing in the Boston suburb of Waltham. Justin Kagan said jurors should have been able to decide whether the evidence was reliable. That's the rule of the jury. Obviously, there the question is fact. Now, Justice Kavanaugh was among several of the justices who suggested the judge had a good reason to keep the account of the brother's killing from the jury because both Dzhonarov and the brother who implicated him were dead by the time of the trial. Now, we don't know what happened, had all the motives in the world to point the finger at the dead guy, Kavanaugh said. So Dzhonarov, who's now 28, was convicted of all 30 charges against him, including conspiracy and use of a weapon of mass destruction and the killing of Massachusetts Institute of Technology police officer Sean Collier during the Dzhonarov brothers' attempted getaway. The appeals court upheld all but a few of his convictions. And the somewhat elephant in the room that was asked by Justice Amy Coney Barrett was, why is the prosecution going forward on the death penalty, given the fact that the Biden administration has put a hold on all death penalty convictions? So why do they want him to be sentenced to death only to not be sentenced to death? Apparently, the government counsel didn't really have a good answer for that other than they wanted to make sure that they sought the appropriate punishment. Although you have to acknowledge that's a pretty good question. But we'll see what the court will do. You never know with the Supreme Court. You really do never know. All right, Ahmaud Arbery, another case that is coming up. Well, jury summons have gone out, and they have gone out to one out of every 85 residents in Glynn County, Georgia, for the trial of three men charged with killing Ahmaud Arbery. Jury selection is set to begin Monday for the trial, and Greg and Travis McMichael, a father and son, are accused of following Arbery in a pickup truck after they spotted him jogging through their neighborhood. The third man, William Roddy Bryan, is a neighbor of the McMichaels. He is accused of joining the pursuit of Arbery and filming on his cell phone as Travis McMichael allegedly shot Arbery at close range. Now, the final tally represented about 1,000 people summoned for the case, which was done in an effort to combat publicity. Arbery's death received and the increased the chances of finding an impartial jury from the residents. Now, the residents in the jury pool will undergo questioning, called voir dire, so they can determine and see if they can make their decision based solely on the evidence. Ultimately, the judge needs to seat 12 people plus four alternate jurors to fill in for jury members who would otherwise get sick or have to be dismissed during trial. One of the questions that's going to be asked is how much the jury pool members already know about the case and whether they've obviously formed an opinion about the defendant's guilt or innocence. And that will largely determine who gets dismissed and who is going to wind up being a final juror. Potential jurors were mailed and asked to fill out a three-page questionnaire asking whether they followed the case in the news, on social media, and what they already know about the case. They'll be asked more questions by the lawyers at the courthouse, both in groups as well as individually. Expect this process, I would estimate, to take at least a week. First, all the questionnaires have to be received back. They have to be sorted, given to the prosecution and the defense. The defense is going to be asked by the judge to see if they can come to any agreements with the prosecution about jurors that should be dismissed. And usually that's going to be people that say on their questionnaire, he's guilty, they're absolutely innocent, the dead guy deserved killing, anything like that, they're going to get booted. The prosecution is going to try to get rid of the jurors that they think favor the defense. The defense is going to try to get rid of the jurors that will favor the prosecution. And hopefully you're left with a bunch of people that nobody knows exactly what's going to take place, but hopefully they'll be fair and impartial to both sides and give everyone in that courtroom a fair trial. All right, next on the docket, mom gone wild. At least she's not a teacher. I guess we can say that. Well, a California woman is facing felony charges after she allegedly threw alcohol-filled sex parties for underage teenagers. Now, according to court records, 47-year-old Shannon O'Connor is accused of hosting parties for teens at her Bay Area home, which included sexual activities and alcohol such as beer, vodka, and fireballs. The suspect would watch as the high school children had sex, sometimes non-consensual. This is all according to police reports. Now, O'Connor allegedly told the teens to refrain from telling their parents, and during one incident, she refused to call the police after one of the teens started choking on his own vomit and passed out. It's also alleged that O'Connor allegedly watched and laughed as a drunk teen sexually battered a young girl in the bed. She is also accused of supplying copious amounts of alcohol to children as young as 13. I always sound like the fuddy-duddy parent when there's parents that want to provide alcohol to underage children. Okay, first of all, it's a crime to do that. It's not just a rite of passage, oh, let them drink. You are committing a felony in most jurisdictions. It's called contributing to the delinquency of a minor. And yeah, I know it's all fun and games until somebody gets sick, goes to the hospital, or God forbid, dies because they get in a car and drive away. And now in this particular incident, you have a situation where this woman is trying to be the cool aunt or something. I don't know, but what the hell are all these kids doing over at this woman's house? Why is she providing it to them? It is a crime. I'm telling you, this woman, this Miss O'Connor, we'll give her the presumption of innocence, but she needs to go to prison, okay? This is just wrong. And like I said, I may sound like the fuddy-duddy old guy, right? But I'm telling you, it's a crime. And yeah, nobody cares. It's cute. They're all just drinking until somebody gets sick, somebody passes out. God forbid, they die. I'm telling you, don't do it. Consider that your free legal advice of the day. I know. Let's not contribute to the delinquency of a minor. That's right. You're supposed to be a parent. You're not their best friend. Okay? Sometimes you got to be the tough guy. It's called being an adult, being a parent. All right. Oh, boy, I feel better about that. All right. Next, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, if there's small children listening, and this is not for small children, we don't advertise to small children, this is for mature adults. But this is one of those cases, ladies and gentlemen, where this is just dumb and it's gross, okay? And people can say, oh, Scott, the people, they may have issues. Okay, well, our dumb criminal today, he's got some issues, okay? And what he did was just stupid. So let's get to it. Now, a homeowner by the name of Catherine Engel told police that last month she installed a trail camera inside her four-stall beach barn where she kept her horses. She said she started to see marks around one of the horses' necks and would find ropes and bungee cords around other horses' necks. The camera captured a guy by the name that was ultimately identified as Santiago Victoria. He's 57 years old. And the video shows him entering the barn late at night and invading a stall with a horse named Mariah and getting behind the horse in a sexual manner. Well, obviously the police decided to look into this because one, it's just dumb and it's weird and it's super creepy, right? So the cops find the individual, and they ask Mr. Victoria, and guess what? He admits to having sex with the horses, but couldn't recall maybe how many times it had happened. Why? Because it happened so much? Ugh, that's just gross. Mr. Victoria was arrested on 3 felony burglary charges. What's the burglary? Going into the dwelling, right? To commit a crime therein. That's burglary, ladies and gentlemen. Yep, having sex with animals is a crime, and doing it in the barn is a structure, a dwelling. There you have burglary and the lewd acts with a horse called bestiality. Mr. Victoria was booked into the county jail, where he's being held in lieu of a $75,000 bond. I don't think that bond is high enough. It should be higher. Mr. Victoria, if you get out, I hope you get the help you need. But please stay away from the children and stay away from all animals. That's just weird. It's creepy. And Mr. Victoria, you are Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week. And even with the competition from last week that you're competing against, by God, I think you are in the running to be the winner. But I'm not sure I want to send you anything, because I don't know what the hell you're going to do with it. I don't know. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.